From the American College of Cardiology, this is Dr. Kim Eagle, ACC.org Editor-in-Chief. With this week's Eagle's Eye View, this is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. I've chosen three articles to talk about today. One of them deals with variations in revascularization practice and outcomes for asymptomatic patients with stable ischemic heart disease. The second looks at the stability of our current recommendations for surveillance and operation for small and medium-sized abdominal aneurysms. And the last is an update on the fourth universal definition of myocardial infarction. So let's start with the first article. It's entitled Variation in Revascularization Practice and Outcomes in Asymptomatic Stable Ischemic Heart Disease Patients. It comes to us from a population-based study taken in Ontario, Canada. The patients had known but asymptomatic stable ischemic heart disease and obstructive CAD. The cohort included nearly 10,000 patients, 47% of whom received medical therapy and about 53% were revascularized. Between hospitals, there was a twofold variation in the ratio of patients who received revascularization compared to medical therapy. The variation across the hospitals was not explained by patient, physician, or hospital factors. In this particular observational registry study, revascularization was associated with a hazard ratio of 0.81 for death and 0.58 for myocardial infarction, and this was consistent across tertiles. So the authors concluded that, first of all, there was a lot of practice variation and that a clinical benefit was observed in this cohort study when revascularization was provided. The strongest predictor of revascularization in this study was coronary anatomy. But after accounting for patient, physician, hospital factors, substantial variation in hospital revascularization practices remained. And it was very interesting to see the potential benefit of revascularization here. This is an example of how registry science can inform that current practices appear to be effective, but it's a non-randomized trial, and all kinds of biases exist in studies like this. Clearly, if patients didn't have coronary anatomy that was suitable for revascularization, then they would be more likely to be offered medical therapy. Similarly, if they had major comorbidities that weren't captured in the electronic medical record, then they might receive non-revascularization strategy for fear of the safety of the procedure. Studies like this, I think, again, call to mind the need for ongoing randomized trials that are large. And the ischemia trial, the International Study of Comparative Health Effectiveness with Medical and Invasive Approaches, will be, I think, the next major trial that will help us understand the current situation. For now, this study certainly supports the notion of selected revascularization in patients who might be lower risk, higher benefit types of individuals. The second study I want to talk about is from Circulation this week, the safety of men with small and medium abdominal aortic aneurysms under surveillance in the National Health Service Screening Program. This is really a look at the risk of rupture of AAA in men who are under surveillance. The investigators looked at the NHS abdominal aortic aneurysm screening program, and they followed patients who either had small or medium-sized aneurysms, small being 3 to 4.4 centimeters, in diameter, medium 4.5 to 5.4. And the screening program's database collected ultrasound information, dates of referral, loss of follow-up, etc. They also followed patients for death and death due to ruptured abdominal aortic aneurysms. There were nearly 20,000 men in this study with over 50,000 men years of surveillance. So of 18,652 men, there were 31 men who had a ruptured AAA during surveillance, and of course, the mortality of this group was high, 29 died. About 952 men died from other causes during surveillance, usually cardiovascular or cancer. The overall mortality rate was about 2% per year, and it was similar for men with small and medium-sized aneurysms. The risk of rupture was 0.03% per annum for men with a small AAA and about 8 times higher, 0.28% per year for medium-sized abdominal aortic aneurysms. The risk of rupture for men with an abdominal aortic aneurysm just below the threshold, 5 to 5.4, was about 0.4% per year. So the authors concluded that the risk of rupture of AAA in surveillance is below 0.5% per annum, even just below the present referral threshold of 5.5. And the study suggests, I think, that the current recommendations regarding surveillance and when to refer for surgery are working. Rupture of the small or medium-sized aneurysms is very low, and I think with proper medical therapy, particularly of things like smoking, hypertension, hyperlipidemia, and excellent ongoing surveillance, the current strategy for screening seems to be working and need not be changed. The last paper I want to talk about is the fourth universal definition of myocardial infarction, and this was published this week in the European Heart Journal. And I'm just going to give you the key points. This is an excellent document that you may want to read in its entirety. So first, there are major changes in this document, and they include a differentiation of myocardial infarction from injury, and they delineate the roles of cardiac MRI and CTA in the evaluation of acute coronary syndromes. Generally, cardiac troponin levels should be drawn on initial assessment and 3 to 6 hours after initial assessment, and possibly earlier in the 1 to 3 hour time frame for high sensitivity assays. Getting a universal interval for serial sampling is challenging because of the variation in the timing of symptoms and when patients come to the emergency department, and the fact that some places are using conventional troponin assays, others are using high sensitivity assays. Myocardial injury is defined by only one criteria, the elevation of cardiac troponin with at least one value above the 99th percentile upper reference limit. And this is an all-encompassing term for elevated troponins of both ischemic and non-ischemic etiologies. So myocardial infarction is myocardial injury attributed specifically to ischemia. That means there's clinical evidence of a rise in troponin and at least one of the following: ischemic symptoms or ECG changes, development of pathologic Q waves, imaging evidence of new loss of viable myocardial or regional wall motion abnormalities consistent with ischemia, and lastly, could be an identification of a coronary thrombus by angiography or autopsy. The term type 1 MI refers to those thought to be secondary to acute atherothrombosis, while type 2 is thought to be due to ischemia caused by oxygen supply and demand mismatch, not related to acute coronary thrombosis. Type 3 MI, this might be a new term for you. It's diagnosed postmortem in patients who presented with signs and symptoms suggestive of myocardial ischemia but passed before biomarkers were measured. Now, there are two other types of MI that you should be aware of, type 4 and type 5. Type 4A, post-PCI event, type 5, post-CABG event, occurring within 48 hours after the index procedure and defined by an elevation of troponin beyond a prior stable baseline value and with either ICG, angiographic, or imaging evidence of ischemia. Type 4B defines stent thrombosis-related MIs, and they're defined as acute less than 24 hours, subacute 1 to 30 days, late 30 days to 1 year, or very late, more than 1 year after PCI. Type 4C would be an MI thought to be due to restenosis following PCI in an infarct-related artery. Myocardial injury can also occur during non-revascularization cardiac procedures, and we see this after TAVR. It also can happen from direct trauma or coronary obstruction, embolization. And these are really not classified as infarctions unless they meet both the biomarker and ischemia criteria for type 5 MIs. This particular document and recommendation did not have specific categories for elevation of troponin in patients with acute heart failure, kidney disease, critical illness, or non-cardiac procedures. The diagnosis should be based on the presence or absence of ischemia and acute thrombosis, given type 1 and type 2 MIs, or acute myocardial injury not related to ischemia, and that can occur in all kinds of scenarios, as you know. Elevation of troponin in the setting of atrial fibrillation with rapid ventricular rate and accompanying ST depression should not be classified as type 2 MI unless signs of overt ischemia are present. Otherwise, the rise should be attributed to myocardial injury. Finally, myocardial infarction in non-obstructive coronary disease, MINOCA, should probably be classified as either type 1, thrombosis with recanalization, or type 2, coronary spasm, coronary dissection, failure of vasomotor function, depending on the clinical presentation and or angiographic findings. My experience with this is it's not always easy to tell in retrospect, but that's a discussion for another day. So I thought all three of these articles were interesting. I think they're informative for practice. That's why I chose them among all the articles that we reviewed this week. I want to thank you for listening to Eagle's Eye View. This is your weekly cardiovascular update from ACC.org. And you can find these journal scans as well as the article links on the ACC's website. Also, look for our new educational catalog feature on ACC.org. It's under the Education and Meetings tab. Using this tool, you can sort our educational offerings by various formats, and many of these are free. Find us online or wherever you get your podcasts. And until next week, I hope you have a good one. Thank you.